This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. For many Americans, 9 months of the pandemic has meant 9 months without a commute on mass transit. Ridership has plummeted nationwide, forcing transit agencies to face funding shortages and an uncertain future. For many, many essential workers, life without public transportation is simply not an option.
This is Salman calling from Houston, Texas. I'm a physician who's responding to your voice prompt about mass transit in the USA. So responding to the pandemic, both in Boston and now in Houston, I used public transit. In Boston, I didn't own a vehicle. Here in Houston, I live about 35 miles from the hospital. And public transit has really made it possible for me to provide high-quality patient care and stay safe after long night shifts. I think that public transit will continue to help healthcare workers in the foreseeable future and do so in a climate-friendly way and in a way that helps us working nights stay safe on the roads after those long night shifts taking care of folks.
That's one of many messages we received about public transportation and COVID-19. Today, we're checking in on three transit areas that are anticipating massive service cuts if they don't get the federal aid they need soon. We'll get to San Francisco and our home, Washington, D.C., later on in the show. But first, let's start in New York. Joining us now from New York City is Pat Foy. He's the chairman and CEO of the Metropolitan Transportation Agency. That's the corporation responsible for public transportation in the state of New York. Pat, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jen, for having me.
Also joining us from San Francisco is Laura Bliss. She's a reporter covering transportation and technology for CityLab. Laura, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to kick things off with a voicemail from one of our listeners in New York City. Here's what Andrew had to say.
I'm a professional who relies on the New York City transit system for all of my travel. Reduced service would mean losing time each day for a longer commute or spending large amounts of money on car services. With MTA threatening dire service cuts, I fear that the working and middle class will bear the brunt of the system's financial crisis.
Andrew, thanks for that message. You know, Pat, last month you proposed a worst-case scenario plan to cut subway and bus service by 40%. You also proposed cutting two lines of the busiest commuter rail lines in the country by 50%. That's all if the MTA does not receive substantial federal aid. Paint us a picture of the MTA's financial situation right now.
Sure, Jen. The MTA is facing a once-in-a-100-year fiscal tsunami unlike any financial challenge it's ever faced. That includes 9/11, Superstorm Sandy, various storms, and actually orders of magnitude worse than the Great Depression. And I'll just give you one fact. Subway ridership from September 1929, the month before the crash, to 1933, which was the bottom of subway ridership during the Great Depression. Subway ridership went down during that period 13 years. I recognize the Great Depression went on for a decade, but at the worst days of the pandemic, subway ridership, New York City subways, was down 95%. It's recovered substantially, but even today is down 70%. The MTA gets half our revenue from our customers and fares and tolls. And the decline in ridership that I just described has been different numbers, but felt on subways, buses, Metro North, Long Island Railroad, two commuter rails we run, and also on bridges and tunnels, which have come back. Bridges and tunnels are down about 10-12% depending on the day. That's important because it subsidizes mass transit. The deficit we face over a period of years without federal aid is nearly $16 billion. The service cuts, Jen, that we described, that I described at our board meeting last month, nobody at the MTA wants to cut service at all. No one wants to lay off any of our colleagues who have performed heroically throughout this entire pandemic, but our hand may be forced if, in the case of the MTA, we don't get $12 billion of federal aid.
To Andrew's question, who will bear the brunt of the cuts you're considering right now?
Well, the answer is Andrew's right. And I'll talk first about operations and then we'll talk about capital projects. Look, during the pandemic and today, most of our riders are first responders and essential employees who don't own cars. They don't have the luxury of driving to their jobs in most cases. And they don't have the option of working remotely or getting on a Zoom call as we are this morning. They include transit workers, Obviously, public employees, men and women working in grocery stores and pharmacies, utility workers, transit workers, firefighters, EMTs, et cetera. From the capital point of view, capital projects, capacity expansions, improving the system, resignaling ADA projects. I'll pick out two projects which are also, from a social equity point of view, going to be very troublesome. We are proposing in the new capital plan to extend the 2nd Avenue subway to 125th Street in Harlem. East Harlem is one of the most underserved regions of Manhattan in the entire city by mass transit. Many significant portion of East Harlem residents have to drive to work. That project is on pause as a result of the pandemic. So from an operating point of view, low-income customers, members of communities of color are going to suffer both in terms of cutting back operation service, but also the pause that continues on our capital plan.
Laura, so we have a picture of what's happening in New York with mass transit. How does that reflect what we're seeing across the country right now?
Yeah, similar forecasts in other major cities across the country, which really rely on their transit systems as it's almost a cliche, but it's true, as a spine of their economies. So I'm here in San Francisco, where the executive director and officials laid out a similarly grim plan to cut back service and about 22% of the transit operating workforce just last week in order to close a $600 million budget gap over the next 2 years. And I just want to kind of underscore what Mr. Foy is saying. I mean, here too, there's still a relatively large percentage of, you know, the transit riding population who are still boarding buses and trains every day. It's close to 200,000 people who are still using transit every day. So these are not systems that have been, you know, abandoned. In Washington, D.C., you know, our nation's capital, and where, you know, Congress is deliberating, right, on a possible package that would provide some additional aid to agencies. Officials there are discussing 40% cuts to the bus network and really severe reductions to metro rail service, including completely eliminating all weekend service on trains and shutting down the system on weekdays after 9 p.m. So these are cuts that would really change the system from something of a economic lifeblood to really an anemic last resort.
Pat, public hearings have begun on proposed increases to fares and tolls in New York. So far, these increases have garnered a lot of criticism from the public. How will you minimize the impact on New Yorkers, particularly essential workers and those in low-income areas who depend on the MTA most?
Good question, Jen. First, we've made no decision with respect to increasing fares on subways and buses and the commuter rails. A number of options have been presented. One option on both subways, buses, and the commuter rails is to maintain the base fare and to make changes to other fare options, which are less used, some believe, by low-income customers and residents of communities of color. So that option may, for instance, the base fare on the subway right now is $2.75 per ride. There are options on both the subways, buses, and the commuter rails to maintain the base fare. Obviously, the base fare on the commuter rails is higher. We are acutely aware of the rise in unemployment in the New York area, the increase in underemployment, and the fact that many of our customers and employees and neighbors are suffering, and the board will take that into account before any action is undertaken. We have an additional public hearing tonight.
About 15 seconds here.
Another one on Wednesday, and that debate is well underway.
Well, we'll check back in with you on the other side of that debate. That's Pat Foy. He's the chairman and CEO of the Metropolitan Transportation Agency in New York. Pat, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jen.
And Laura Bliss is staying with us. She's a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab. Coming up, could a $908 billion coronavirus stimulus plan help save mass transit? We'll ask Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Gimlet and Resistance. When people all around the world were protesting this summer, you'd hear it over and over. This time is different. but how? In Gimlet's new podcast, Resistance, host Saeed Tijan Thomas Jr. brings us stories from the front lines of the movement for Black lives, told by the generation fighting for change. It's a show about how we can make sure this time really is different. Resistance is out now. Follow and listen for free on Spotify.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Writer Baratunde Thurston says this democracy experiment requires more than just voting.
This is incumbent on all of us. It takes two, right? It takes two to make a thing go right. It takes two to knock it out of sight. And both parties in a national level discourse, both sides have to still remain committed.
How to be a good citizen. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking about the future of mass transit with Laura Bliss, a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab. I want to bring in another guest now. Joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, is Mark Warner. He's a Democratic senator from Virginia. Senator Warner, welcome back to the program.
Jen, thanks for having me on.
So we just heard from Pat Foy, the CEO and chairman of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York. He's asking Congress for $12 billion in federal relief by the end of 2021, or also have to reduce transit service by 40%. Now, you're part of this bipartisan group of lawmakers proposing a $15 billion investment for public transit agencies as part of a $908 billion relief package. What are you and other members of Congress doing to ensure this bill passes?
Well, we are trying to broaden our bipartisan group. I think it would be complete, I call it stupidity on steroids, if Congress were to leave for the holidays and not provide at least an emergency relief package. Remember, people will lose their unemployment the day after Christmas. People will be kicked out of their rental apartments beginning of January. Many small businesses need support. And we're talking this morning about Metro here in the greater Washington area. We are still down about two-thirds on ridership and two-thirds in terms of revenue. And if we don't get additional federal assistance to Metro in D.C. area, you're going to see 1,400 people lose their jobs. You'll see all Metro service discontinued on weekends and after 9 o'clock in the evening. That would disrupt our economy. It would disrupt the federal government and obviously disrupt people's lifestyles. So this is critical that it gets done. It is not a perfect package. I will be the first to acknowledge we've got $15 billion for Metro in this package for transit systems, public transit systems. We've got an additional $8 billion for private bus company routes that are more kind of in rural America. We've got about $17 billion for airlines, $4 billion for airports. So this four-month package is a bridge to the Biden administration, but we've got to get it done. And I think we've seen now President-elect Biden endorsed this package. The Democratic leadership, we're waiting to see if Senator McConnell, the Republican leader, will help us bring it to the floor.
So that if the bill passes, again, it includes $15 billion for transit. We know MTA by itself is asking for $12 billion in federal relief by the end of 2021. So how will this money be divvied up among the transit agencies that are struggling across the nation?
Well, there is a traditional formula. No transit agency, just as no state or local government, or that, for that matter, small restaurant who's looking for assistance, is going to be made 100% whole. I know, for example, in the first bill, the CARES bill, the Washington Metro system got about $870 billion. That was coming out of a $32 billion base. So we're talking about now for a four-month period, about half that amount for the Washington Metro system. I don't know what it'll be for the New York system. But there's also in our relief package $160 billion for state and local governments. And again, I'm not familiar fully on how the New York system, region system is funded. But here in the greater D.C. area, Maryland, Virginia, the local governments, the district all chip in and for the payments of the system. So consequently, state assistance could be used by the governors and the mayor, respectively, to also buttress those the direct dollars that would go to Metro.
Well, Diane from Arlington wrote in, the metro and buses are my main mode of transportation. I have not ridden either since the beginning of March due to COVID. Our neighborhood rush hour bus began running again a couple of months ago. Ridership has been extremely sparse. I fear it will disappear completely. Costs must be cut somehow. Senator Warner, the D.C. Metro is facing the grimmest financial forecast in its 50-year history. Some of the proposed cuts include ending weekend train service completely, reducing bus service to 45% of pre-pandemic operations. How do you plan to support your constituents who rely on the metro to commute to and from work each day, especially since it's been so difficult to get the second round of support passed through Congress?
Well, I think it's been abysmal that the Senate has not taken up any of the House-passed legislation to get a relief package. Clearly, the leadership of both parties have been going on this political blame game, and that's why a group of us in the center, bipartisan, came up with this $908 billion four-month emergency relief plan. Does it meet every need? No. Does it bridge us to a hopefully a more willing to deal Biden administration? Yes. Will it provide needed relief for Washington Metro and other public transit systems? Absolutely. Will it provide all of the backfill that has been caused by transit systems around the country, and particularly when it's hard to predict when people will feel comfortable getting back on the bus, getting back on the metro? That still remains to be seen, but failure to act will mean these systems that we've literally invested billions of dollars in will frankly, as you already pointed out, we would in service on the weekends, we would in service after 9 o'clock at night. That would have a dramatic disruption to the whole regional economy.
That's Mark Warner. He's a Democratic senator from Virginia. Senator Warner, we appreciate your time.
Jen, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
And still with us is Laura Bliss, a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab. Laura, what's your reaction to what we just heard from Senator Warner?
I mean, so much of what he's saying is absolutely true. The just $15 billion will not, you know, nearly go far enough to cover the extent of the backfill that agencies say is required. That number that they're asking for was $32 billion. That number was included in the earlier HEROES Act passed by the House earlier this year. And as you already pointed out, Jen, I mean, you know, New York City MTA alone is asking for $12 billion. So this, you know, $15 billion kind of goes to show, you know, wouldn't leave much left over if we were talking about fully, you know, restoring MTA service. I think it's also important to point out, you know, Senator Warner was pointing to pre-existing formulas for funding transit agencies, and that's absolutely true. He's referring to how, you know, Congress normally funds transit. But one thing that I've heard from a number of transit leaders and advocates is that, you know, using those normal kind of historic formulas to distribute this kind of relief aid is really tricky in a time when, you know, you have such reduced revenue coming into these very, very large, you know, big city agencies. Like the MTA, for example, you know, as well as actually Washington, D.C.'s Metro, you know, both really rely on passenger fares to support their budgets in a normal year. And so relief aid is just not going to go nearly as far for them as it is for smaller, even mid-sized city agencies. So, for example, just going back to New York one more time, you know, the CARES Act funding, which was $25 billion back in March, only lasted 4 months in New York City. So that just kind of gives you a sense of just how fast that money goes for large systems.
So when you talk to public transit advocates, Laura, what dollar amount do they give you? What do they say to you is really needed?
$32 billion is the number cited by advocates at APTA, which is the American Public Transportation Association, and other groups, as well as transit agency leaders themselves.
We've been talking a lot about the impact of the pandemic on people who use public transportation, but what about the impact on the folks who run these systems, the drivers, the operators, the fare takers? How are their jobs being impacted?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you think about a let's say, you know, 40% reduction in service like New York City MTA is contemplating, or, you know, sustaining the 60% cuts to the San Francisco bus network, which is where I am for the next 2 years, you can kind of think about a proportionate, you know, cut in workforce, right? Because you need people to run these buses, and you need people to service the subways and obviously operate them and manage the tracks and so forth. And so, I mean, here in San Francisco, we're talking about a 22% reduction in workforce. In New York City, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but, you know, it's in the thousands. And I think that, you know, Senator Warner and Pat Foy earlier on the call, you know, the CEO of MTA, both pointed out that these layoffs would be coming for people who have been, you know, considered essential workers for the last 8 months, who have been, you know, continuing to operate these services in support of the people who are still riding, who are in many cases themselves, you know, frontline workers working at grocery stores, pharmacies, hospitals. So this would be a pretty devastating impact on people who have already put themselves, you know, at tremendous risk for many months now.
We're talking about the future of mass transit with Laura Bliss, a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab and a member of the 1A Text Club, writes, for several months, the High Point, North Carolina transit system has been free for riders. Masks are mandatory on the buses and inside the terminal building. When there's a reported infection, the system shuts down for sanitizing and returns with a reduced schedule. In my area, it's important for employees and seniors to get dependable transportation for shopping, jobs, and medical appointments. We'll hear more from our guest and from you in a moment. This is 1A.
This message comes from AT&T, committed to keeping students and teachers connected. AT&T has connected over 200 million students with tools and technology for distance learning. More at att.com/remote learning.
From young to old.
How many 99-year-olds have you interviewed?
A look at how this pandemic has changed people's lives forever.
You're officially married.
I'm going. Listen now to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
This is 1A. Now let's get back to our conversation about the pandemic's impact on mass transit with Laura Bliss. She's a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab. And we heard from one of you about the state of mass transit where you live. Here's what Evan shared using our app, 1A Vox Pop.
In Denver, we have the Regional Transportation District, or RTD. And even before the pandemic, RTD was not doing well. They were having a lot of trouble retaining drivers, and they actually had one of the highest fares in the country. And so now that the pandemic has come, all of those things have gotten worse and more. The first round of layoffs is scheduled to start soon, and the transit system here needs a lot of improvement. You know, Denver is a sprawling city and we need more transit and we need it fast. And it's really discouraging to see it being underfunded and underprioritized by our legislatures.
Thanks for that message, Evan. Laura, I want to be clear that public transit was on a pretty worrisome trajectory even before the pandemic. Talk about what we've seen over the last 5 years or so.
Yes, thank you, John. That's right. I mean, and I think cities like Denver are really good examples of that recent trajectory. You know, post-2015, public transit ridership nationally has been declining after several years of increasing. And that's for a number of reasons. I mean, one, I think as listeners in Washington, D.C. and New York particularly know, you know, there's aging systems with pretty significant maintenance issues that were, you know, breaking down and just being unreliable and kind of pushing riders away for that reason. But then also, you know, these big systems, Denver's is actually pretty recent light rail systems that opened in recent years and just didn't really, you know, go far enough or, you know, were not well enough connected to, you know, compete really with not only, you know, private vehicles, but also emerging modes like Uber and Lyft, which, you know, came out and really kind of accelerated in popularity and on that same time frame too. So in addition to, you know, a recovering economy post great recession, transit agencies have been struggling with declining ridership and the financial challenges that come with that.
Well, we got this comment from a member of the 1A Text Club. They say, I live in Lansing, Michigan. We have the bus and that's it. I find it extremely disappointing that Michigan hasn't invested in a subway system for mass transit between the capital city and Detroit. It holds its back economically. The roads are terrible and everyone I know owns a car or has to depend on the bus. The closest stop is 2 miles from my house and I live on a rundown road that is unforgiving in the winter months. Mass transit would be a game changer in our state. We've talked a lot about public transportation in major cities, but what do we know about how transit systems in smaller cities are doing? There are plenty of systems out there that never had weekend service to begin with.
Yeah, it's so true. And I was just looking at my Twitter feed and getting a tweet from somebody saying that these transit cuts will disproportionately affect people with disabilities in communities of any size because they also use public transportation services wherever they are. So it's absolutely true. There are people who use public transit as their primary mode of transportation all over the country. They may not be in nearly as large numbers as in a San Francisco or a Los Angeles, but they are there. They are, working. They are also, elderly people who, are getting to the grocery store, getting to healthcare. They are, parents. So these are people, real individuals who need this service.
But I think it's important to place mass transit within the larger transportation ecosystem, within our infrastructure ecosystem, because we also need smooth roads and sidewalks for people to get to a bus stop. If someone has a disability and there isn't a sidewalk to bring them to that stop, that's an issue. So how does this conversation fit within the larger conversation of our crumbling infrastructure?
That's such a good question. Again, to just harken back to the crumbling infrastructure of some of these systems themselves, like, Pat Foy was pointing to earlier in our conversation, they were really just turning a corner at the New York City MTA on reviving their capital budget and making some critical investments that were long overdue. So you're absolutely right. On top of that, there's all the kind of connective tissue, that supports transit service, whether it's, sidewalks, whether it's the roads themselves that people are traveling on when they're on the bus. So there's a plethora of issues. And I think it's worth pointing out that, President Trump campaigned on the idea of being a builder president and investing, $1.1 trillion into our transportation, waterways, broadband infrastructure. And that really did not come to pass. And indeed, here we are.
Alan emailed us, I live in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, and I don't rely on public transportation and never have in my daily life. Personally, I can't see justifying providing federal funding to such systems when these issues are region-specific and do not directly impact much of the country. Senator Warner forgets that the Northern Virginia and D.C. metropolitan area needs do not necessarily reflect the needs of the rest of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the country. And Alan, they are referring to our earlier conversation with Senator Warner. But Laura, what do you make of Alan's point that it's not justifiable to provide federal support to these transit systems that are more, located more in more densely populated areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a point that reflects debate at the heart of whether public transit should be funded and should be funded at higher levels in this country. That it goes back decades and decades and decades back to the 1960s or even earlier, which was when the federal government first started giving federal dollars to these systems. And the rationale then I think is really largely the same today, which is that we're talking about in some cases, in the larger cities, economies that do support the rest of the country in a pretty substantial way, and then providing a fair kind of distribution of funds for people, no matter the mode that they use. I mean, the federal government, subsidizes roads of all kinds, not just the federal highways. And so I think there's a question of kind of fairness that transit advocates would point to there.
Well, let's get to one last voicemail. Here's what one of you had to say about the pandemic's effect on your work commute.
Hi, my name is Jamal, calling from Arlington, Virginia. I actually commute from Arlington to Baltimore for work, both MARC and Amtrak. And I've given up my vehicle. It's been about a little three and a half years now. I really don't want to purchase a vehicle, but the way things are looking, I may have to go that route. I am a staunch advocate for public transit, and I really do support any funding, as much funding, both federal and local, that can be infused into the systems to keep them going. It's very important that we have fewer cars on the road.
Laura, what's your reaction to what we just heard from Jamal?
I think that what he is contemplating is reflective of what probably a number of people who are contemplating how they might return to the office, or, you know, how they might return to a greater level of travel than they're previously experiencing, which is that the systems that they return to, you know, very well may not be the ones that they left back in March. And so that means, you know, you look to other options, whether that's buying a car or maybe moving to a different part of the city potentially, or part of your community. And so, you know, from a kind of urban systems, you know, level thinking, the cumulative effect of individuals making these kinds of different choices will have pretty significant effects on, you know, congestion, carbon emissions, potentially quality of life, and of course, that kind of sustained reduced ridership for the systems themselves will spell trouble in the much longer term.
Well, and part of what seems to be an outstanding question is how we work, how we commute, whether we commute, how that's going to be changed by the pandemic, with so many people figuring out the fact that they can work from home and might be able to avoid a commute long term. How concerned are transit agencies about the fact that people just may not be back on the road?
It's a great question. And you know, I think some of the projected budget gaps that we were hearing about earlier in the hour do reflect, you know, accounting for reduced ridership for a number of years. You know, Washington, D.C., for example, is not expecting ridership to return to even 30% of where it was, 34%, I think, until June 2022. So you're absolutely right. I mean, people may change up their commute patterns to work from home more days of the week. And also, people are out of jobs, right? And those jobs may not come bouncing back as quickly as a vaccine may be distributed, you know, whether that or not that's fast. So I think we are gearing up, you know, no matter what, whether aid comes or at what level, for pretty long-term effects of this period.
A member of the 1A Text Club writes, I work for a private university as a shuttle driver. 10 of our 16 drivers have been laid off. I was terrified in the beginning of contracting the virus and still am. I am fourth in seniority, so I am working, but when there was money for pandemic workers, we didn't qualify, feeling a little like we are not valued for our service despite the risk. Laura, as we move ahead and wait to see whether or not Congress will pass another round of pandemic relief, one that includes transit money, what are you watching for?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm watching for certainly the kind of big dollar figure. You know, will is that $15 billion the kind of best case scenario right now, as well as the distribution of the funding? As we were talking about earlier, there was kind of concern from the earlier package that there was kind of not enough priority placed on the big cities that really rely on these systems most deeply. And then also, I think, you know, maybe as a point of closing, even like, you know, there are still people who are riding these systems. There are 200,000 people getting on the bus in D.C. every day, you know, 175,000 in San Francisco, almost 2 million people riding New York City MTA every single day. And so these cuts will have an immediate effect on the people, many of whom are our frontline workers right now, using these services to get to the places they need to be.
That's Laura Bliss. She's a transportation and technology reporter for CityLab based in San Francisco. Laura, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jen. Really, really enjoyed it.
Remember, we have a text club. We'll only ever send you one text a day. It's the fastest way to connect with us. You can find details about how to sign up in the Ask 1A tab at the1a.org. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink, and our podcast is produced by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.